Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.
Fueled by Frank and Honest Gourmet Coffee. The perfect blend to kickstart your day. Barista quality coffee available at Centra and Supervalu.
Jennifer Zamparelli, 2FM. Good morning. My next guest is a lawyer, an activist, and a woman that you may know from CNN and Sky News or ITV's This Morning. She has been described as one of the most toxic voices in Britain's race relations debate by the Daily Telegraph. Is she bothered? No. Dr. Shola Moshog-Bamimu is on the line now to tell us why she wrote her new book, which is called This Is Why I Resist. Dr. Shola, good morning. How are you?
Hello, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. I'm very good. I'm honoured and delighted to have you on the show this morning. Dr. Shola, you feel really strongly about racial injustice, and rightly so. And I have a clip here from ITV when you were defending Meghan Markle, and it sums it up pretty well.
It is not the job of black people and ethnic minorities to educate white people on racism that is perpetrated by white people.
Right.
White folks need to go educate themselves on the racism they perpetrate.
Can I ask you, how do you feel is that message going down?
So great question. Look, I think the reality of the matter is that what you actually played really sums up the ongoing hard conversation and the constant battle by having this conversation on race, racism, and race inclusion in our country today. This is what it's like, where people keep expecting you to to either over-explain what is quite frankly right in front of their eyes,
mm-hmm.
just that level of expectation. And I and many others are like, wait, hold up a second. We're all in the same generation. Why are we having to repeat the same thing that those before us have been saying? And this other expectation that conversations around race inequality and race injustice should be comfortable. My book totally disabuses you of that. This is not about being comfortable. Anyone who wants to come into a conversation about race, racism, and race inclusion that is looking to be made comfortable, I think they just need to walk on by, because they're not ready to have the real conversation. There is so much we need to do together as a society to break down the norms, the stereotypes that have been put in place because of white people. And especially to understand what white supremacy looks like today. It's not just about using the N-word or, you know, carrying burning crosses. It wears suits. It wears nice, you know, dresses. It's in government. It's those who use their choice of words to continually dehumanize black people. It's that legacy of slavery, and it still exists today. And that is what we need to put a stamp on and say, enough is enough. We can't go on this way.
We hear a lot these days the words white privilege. Can we talk about what that looks like in day-to-day life? You briefly touched on it there, but day-to-day life, what does that look like?
So day-to-day life is, I mean, just think about this as an example. Think about the fact that there's some things that some white people who are not who do not understand what it looks like. There's certain things that they're oblivious to. So I could walk into a store with a white woman, right? And if the person in security or shop assistant has a racist mindset, they're white, they have a racist mindset, all they're going to see is a black person and a white person, because it's not written on our foreheads what our, what capital we have, whether we're educated or not, where we live, nothing. And 99.9%, you and I know that it's going to be the black person that'll be followed by the security person, right? It is certain questions that are asked on a on a daily basis to black people and ethnic minorities, like, oh, you really go to that school? Why are you doubting what education we have? Why are you doubting what progress we are able to make? It is also the caucasity, as I like to say, it is also the caucasity of weaponizing whiteness and then claiming that it is people, or, you know, black people, or ethnic minorities who are actually, that they're faking it, especially when we get accused of playing the race card. It's such a nonsense. It is a strategy to silence Black people and ethnic minorities, because it's, you know, a stigma is put on us. So white privilege itself, what it does is to make racist rhetoric, divisive language okay. It immediately excuses behavior that is objectively racist as not racist. It immediately makes anything that is discriminatory, it just says, no, that's okay, it's misspeak, that's wrong. And that is exactly what exists today in our workplace, mm-hmm. in our, it's white privilege.
Now, this week is not only the inauguration, but also Martin Luther King Jr. Day in the States. Can you tell the listeners why you had a go at Ivanka Trump when she tweeted in celebration of that?
Okay, you know what? People concerned. I've just had it up to here with hypocrites, okay? People whose very life choices and decisions and their actions continually discriminate and dehumanize Black people do not get to quote Martin Luther King, do not get to claim that they're honoring a man when their own choices, their own sympathy does exactly the opposite. So I called her out on it. And I was very, very clear that she and others would have been those who incited the man who triggered, you know, who pulled the trigger mm-hmm. on killed Martin Luther King. You know, in 2021, you know, everyone is like, oh, Martin Luther King is great. But we conveniently forget, not me, others conveniently forget that he was one of the most hated men back then in the United States at the time he died, because of white supremacy, because of racist, because they saw him as a racist, that's what they called him, because they saw him as a troublemaker, even as peaceful as he tried to drive change for racial equality and racial justice, he bothered them. And these people with their mindset still exist today. They use their influence, their position, government in every single area to continually weaponize their white privilege from, you know, they weaponize to ensure that racial inequality and racial injustice goes on. And if you ask me why, the answer is simple. And I mentioned this in my book. Those whose way of life is predicated on a denial of an equal value of life and liberty to Black people and ethnic minorities don't want the status quo to change. So you don't get to quote Martin Luther King. Oh, by all means, do so, but expect that I will call you out.
Can we talk about newspapers for a second, and why newspapers will talk of Black on Black crime, but not white on white crime?
I mean, I talk about this in the book. Mm-hmm. I point out how incredibly racist it is to create a whole pathology about Black on Black crime as though white people don't kill white people. I mean, what's your focus on those Black people that kill, you know, some Black people? That it's almost as though people want to deliberately make it look like, well, you can't be talking about systemic racism when Black people kill Black people. Well, white people kill Black people. White people kill white people. And the point we're making is we're talking about systemic racism. We're talking about how it even contributes to the Black on Black crime, right? We're also talking about the system in which people, ethnic minorities, have to exist in, the toxic, the intersecting inequalities that create a toxic environment. I think it's a deliberate thing when media, some parts of media, want to focus on Black on Black crime and make that the issue rather than dealing with the longstanding structural inequalities of systemic racism. It's all a tactic.
Now, Dr. Shelley, you are a political activist as well as a qualified solicitor, so you're well able to handle an argument. I can hear that for sure. But can I ask you, how tiring is it to face into a, you know, day after day of just having to call out racism on social media?
Look, I'll be perfectly honest with you. I think like anything else we are all passionate about, it can be exhausting having to repeat yourself over and over again. And I'm not the only one doing so, because there are others before me, there are others right now doing the same. It's one of the reasons I wrote the book.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, not everybody can watch when you're on or hear when you are speaking. And sometimes the nuances that exist within the complexity of systemic racism can't be broken down in, say, 10 minutes of radio or 6 minutes on TV, right? But however exhausting it might feel, I will tell you right now that the power of my authenticity, the power of my resistance is fueled by my passion for justice and equality. I have time. I will sleep when I'm ready. But right now is the time to fight the good fight. So I can't waste time sleeping or going, okay, well, maybe I should take a break from it. Because the reality, people, is that Black Lives Matter, the movement, the ethos of Black Lives Matter, it's 365 days, 24/7 a year. It's not a hotel you can check in and check out of. Black Lives Matter as an ethos is exactly what motivated and drove the abolition of slavery. It is what motivated and drove the end of colonialism of African nations. And it is what drove the end of apartheid, the protest against that. Black Lives Matter is the ethos that drove the civil rights movement, both in the United States and the United Kingdom. So the ongoing fight to eradicate white supremacy, to end racial inequality and racial injustice, we will keep fighting until we see a change. However exhausting, tiring, annoying, irritating it is to sometimes, you know, you're facing the same people who don't want to hear. But you know what? This is, we are on a cause. And when you fight the good fight of faith, you are moving by faith, not by sight. And you have to keep moving on.
Well, I think you've answered my next question when you say silence is not an option. It is complicity. And I think you're absolutely right. Can I ask you, do your family worry about you and your safety because you're taking your message so public?
Well, they're aware of the threats that I get. They're aware of the volume of abuse.
Have you had a lot?
Yeah, a lot. Yes.
Wow.
But you know what? This isn't new. Those before us and those who've been working and fighting a good fight face the same abuse. And my faith holds me strong. And I always say that it's important to know who you are. If you know who you are, then nobody can define you or redefine you. And I know who I am. So nobody can come tell me what I'm not. And that is what, if I may use the word, that is what ticks them off.
Mm.
That makes them angry, that how dare she. But what they don't understand is that people fought the good fight so that I could say what they could not say. The shoulders upon whom I stand, they did what they had to do, some of them even losing their lives and liberty, so I can do what they could not do. And I can tell you right now, I'm not holding back.
No, I can tell, Dr. Scholl, I can tell, and you shouldn't. You're an absolute joy and an inspiration, I have to say. And I feel very honoured to have you on the show today to talk with us. And I think a good step for people to educate themselves. Like you mentioned, you've written a book. It's called This Is Why I Resist. It is out today. And there's just so much in there to think about. So thank you for taking the time for doing that and for being on the show. I wish you the very best of luck and hope to talk to you soon.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. There we go. That is Dr. Scholl Moss-Shogbamimu. I just want to thank her again for coming on the show and just telling it like it is. These chats, some people can find them uncomfortable. And they should be. And they should make us think. And they should shock us. And they should, I mean, because it's the reality. It is the reality of the world we live in today. So thank you, Dr. Scholl. I wish you the very best of luck. We'll be back right after this.
Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.